Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au or on the podcast a little bit later, welcome to you. It's great to have your company this morning, and what a day it was yesterday following on from the shocking footage aired by Four Corners around Dondale Youth Detention Centre up in Darwin. Of course, not particularly shocking to a lot of blackfellas all around the country who, you know, have had a lot of experience with youth detention centres, and I don't think it was quite shocking. In some ways, I think sometimes the outrage can be just as traumatic, because you think of how many of our mob have actually been talking about this for a very long time. But regardless, something is happening now. Those images compelled the federal government into action straight away, one of the fastest royal commissions ever called in Australia. The next day, Malcolm Turnbull came out and called a royal commission into Northern Territory juvenile detention, which immediately brought up issues about the fact that it had to be a national royal commission, that these abuses, or just the whole problem around juvenile detention nationally, needs to be looked at, particularly Western Australia, in Queensland, and not just there, New South Wales, Victoria. There are concerns over that. Now, yesterday, the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, Adam Giles, actually gave a press conference where he announced the Corrections Minister, John Elfrink, was being sacked, but John Elfrink was keeping his other portfolios, one of them child protection, which just seems phenomenal to me that he would even still be on the front bench. He would even still be in government. He would even still be in parliament after he very obviously lied on Four Corners about the abuse of these children. And we've got to remember this happened 2 years ago now. So these kids were brutalised 2 years ago and nothing happened. There were two inquiries into it. Nothing happened. So I just wonder what more a Royal Commission into the specific anti-juvenile detention arena can do when we need a national focus. Now, yesterday, a coalition of anti-Aboriginal organisations actually called on the anti-government to be dissolved because of this barbaric abuse of children. John Patterson, who's at AMSANT, basically said any government that enacts policies designed to harm children and enables a culture of brutalisation and cover-ups surrenders its right to govern. And they also want Malcolm Turnbull to ensure that the Northern Territory government has no role in the oversight of the Royal Commission. They also want a terms of reference that's broad, so it has to encompass the entire anti-youth detention centre, not just these issues relating to Dondale. Examine all previous inquiries relating to youth justice in the NT for cover-ups and uncover why the recommendations were not implemented. And also they want there to be no limitations on how far the commission can inquire. They've also called on the Commonwealth to appoint an alternative provider of youth detention and child protection out of home care for the Northern Territory. They've basically said the NT government can't be trusted to continue to deliver its services for children at risk. And that the youth who are on remand, who haven't been charged on remand, which is a big problem. A lot of our juvenile detention population is actually kids who are just on remand and been placed in there. So they want them to be removed from Darwin and Alice Springs detention facilities immediately. And also that the Office of the NT Children's Commissioner must be appropriately and adequately resourced to perform her statutory duties. So that's a coalition of Aboriginal, peak Aboriginal organisations, including AMSANT, NAJA, Central Land Council, CAILIS, Northern Land Council, and Olga Havnam at Danila Dilba. So I think those are really important statements to make, and also to ensure that this stays in the control of blackfellas as well. I spoke to Priscilla Collins, who's been a continual guest on this program over the past couple of years now, and who actually spoke quite a lot about Dondal while she came on this program. So these atrocities were never sort of out of the media and Aboriginal media. We were continually talking about it. So it's great that Australia has finally caught up. So I talked to her yesterday, and here's my chat with her. First of all, Priscilla, you've been talking about this for a very long time. Had you seen that footage last night on Four Corners?
Yeah, look, we'd seen the footage a while ago, and we had contacted the Children's Commissioner. They did an investigation, and then the Michael Vito came up to Darwin and did another investigation. So there were two reports that were done and presented to the government. So we've been aware of this for a while, and we've been lobbying with the NT government to make significant changes. Unfortunately, you know, we haven't seen a huge change. There has been a major change within the Department of Corrections. We've got a new Corrections Commissioner. And look, he's good. He works with the non-government sector, and he used to be an ex-police officer as well. So, you know, that's where they should be training the prison officers on how to work with youth and how to de-escalate these sort of situations. So, you know, it's just very, very disappointing. We've known about it for a while, but yeah, the government really hasn't treated it as a priority.
So it must have been quite galling to see John Elfrink on the program last night basically, you know, saying he didn't even know that this sort of thing was going on.
Yeah, look, that's quite disappointing for your Attorney General to be saying that, especially when the report was presented to him. He has access to all of that footage. And to say that he wasn't aware, I'm quite shocked, especially when you see the footage of the young juvenile being tied to a chair with a hood on. And then, you know, just recently, the NT government pushed through legislation to use restraining devices on youth.
Yeah, he tried to expand the use of that, didn't he?
Yeah, and so you've got an attorney who says, look, I'm not aware of it, but then you've got an attorney who's enforcing those sort of restraining devices. So, you know, in this sort of day and age, you can't be playing politics with youth.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you need to be able to support them and act in their best interest.
So this happened 2 years ago now, and you said there has been slight changes. Do you think this sort of reportage maybe a little too late, or it's, you know, it's good that we've got the public outrage?
It's good. This is what we needed. I mean, we've been talking about this for a number of years, lobbying with the NT government, and very little change has happened. So now that it's out in the public and people are outraged, but they have to act on it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're talking about young people, not adults, young people. And young people who come from very traumatised upbringings, backgrounds, and, you know, all you're doing is putting them into a situation where they're being treated worse on the inside than on the outside.
And a lot of these kids, were they some of the... I remember there was a lot of talk and a lot of media coverage around high-profile breakouts out of Dondal. Obviously, now looking back, it's, you know, no wonder that a lot of these kids were breaking out of that centre. They were breaking out of really horrific conditions.
Yeah, because when you look at it, 70% of the juveniles that are in there are on remand. So they haven't actually been sentenced to juvenile detention. So you've got 30% that are left in there. Of that 30%, there's only a small percentage of high-end offenders.
Yeah.
A majority of them shouldn't actually be in there.
Yeah, right.
So when you've got youth being put into situations like that, and that's horrific, where you're seeing youth having their shorts ripped off them and left naked in their cells and being kneed in the back and thrown across rooms, you can understand why they've tried to break out.
Yeah, but obviously at the time, the reaction from a lot of the public was, you know, they're just delinquents. Some of them were even quite horrific calls for them to, you know, come to harm outside. Or, you know, on social media, there was a lot of stuff about calling them to be shot. So there wasn't a lot of public sympathy at the time. They just saw them as a certain type of kid, really.
Yeah, and that's quite disappointing because at the end of the day, the public needs to really understand what's going on. Like I'm saying, there is a small percentage of high-end offenders. Now, they definitely need to go to some sort of youth precinct, no question about it. But a majority are in there for minor offences or on remand. They shouldn't be in there at all.
Yeah.
We're talking about really minor offences. And so that's what the public just sees it, lock them up.
Yeah.
Look, give them a situation of a youth that's coming before the court, and I can tell you they would change their minds very quickly.
Yeah, right. But they don't really listen. They don't really look that far behind it. I think they sort of see an Aboriginal kid, really, don't they? It's an underlying problem of racism.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, people need to put things into perspective, they're young kids who, some of them haven't had homes, they've been through the child protection space, they've had traumatic upbringings. You know, people don't see that side of it. They just say, oh, well, he broke into something and damaged something. Okay, that's fair enough. Mm. But there's other ways you can treat that. By locking them up and having them treated that way in a detention centre is escalating the problem, and it's making them rebel against the system.
Yeah, and it just continues the cycle, doesn't it, obviously, that we've seen continually.
Yep, it definitely does.
I mean, we're based down here and the outrage across the country has been huge, but what's been the reaction from your perspective on the ground in the NT?
Look, Territorians are just outraged. They're actually outraged that this is happening within our own territory, and this has been going for a long time and hasn't been acted upon. We've had a number of press conferences today where a lot of members of the public have come, and they are just shocked and beside themselves that this is happening.
Yeah, which, you know, that's a good thing. What do you think about the Royal Commission? Were you quite shocked that that was called less than 24 hours after this went to air?
Look, I think it's a fantastic decision for the Turnbull government to call this. It needed to happen, and it also needs to really look in not only to what's happening within the Juvenile Detention Centre, but looking at legislation that is implemented in the Northern Territory.
That's the problem, isn't it, that there just seems to be harsher and harsher to punitive laws put in place that makes it harder for kids not to go on this road to jail, isn't there? That's part of the problem?
Yeah. In the Northern Territory, we just have tough on crime, tough on crime. No one actually kind of like takes the back step and says, okay, let's look at why people come in contact with the criminal justice system, and let's look at putting case management plans in place to address not only why they're coming in contact with the system, but that cluster of issues that comes with them, homelessness, education, trauma, et cetera, and really work intensively with individual youth to deal with it. And then you're going to break the cycle. At the end of the day, let's put into perspective, if you have a young child and they've been naughty, isn't it easier to sit down with them and talk to them and try to work out how to deal with the issue rather than lock them in their room, tie them to a chair, and then, you know, let them out a week later and, oh, wow, let's hope they're better.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've just
no
got
sense.
To change your mindset on how you deal with it.
Should we even be locking up kids in the first place? I just feel like maybe we shouldn't even have detention centres, which is something that obviously is not on the current media agenda, I guess. But from your perspective, is there other ways, you know, do we have to have these, you know, really punitive conditions for so many at-risk kids?
No, look, it should be a last resort. Detention centres are a last resort for youth. In the Northern Territory, unfortunately, that's the first point of where they're sent. There's other ways you can deal with it. You know, we're talking only a small percentage of high-end offenders. Now, they're the ones who need intensive casework. But then you've got a large number that shouldn't be in there at all. And then there's another percentage that are low offenders. You know, so most of them shouldn't be in there. There should only be a small percentage that are put into a centre, and we shouldn't be calling it a detention centre. We should be calling it a youth precinct. Yeah. We have wraparound services to deal with that youth so that we're putting them on a better pathway.
The previous Dundale Detention Centre, it wasn't as bad as where they currently are now, is it? Was there a reasoning behind that? Because it seems like the conditions got drastically worse when they went into the old jail, when they converted the old jail into the Dundale Detention Centre.
Look, both of them are just not suitable for youth at all. The first Dundale was not set up as a youth precinct.
Right.
And where they currently are, I mean, they removed the adults from there because they said it wasn't suitable for adults, and then all of a sudden they put the youth in there. So both facilities are not suitable at all.
Yeah, right. And John Alfrink has been dumped today from the corrections portfolio, but he still has his other portfolios, particularly child protection. Is that right in your view that he should be allowed to keep something like child protection as well, given the, I guess, the really strong links that has to juvenile detention as well?
Look, he shouldn't have any portfolio. After seeing the footage last night and the attorney being aware that this was happening, you know, that's absolutely appalling. You shouldn't have those sort of portfolios. You're there to representing the interests of Territorians.
Yeah.
And that's just not what's been going on.
And Adam Giles also came out today claiming that he had never seen the footage before either. Do you think that's a valid response? Is that a plausible response from him?
Look, I don't think it is, because you've had two reports done. They were presented to government. Now, you know, in those situations where you're using tear gas on youth, you're using restraining devices on youth, he must have been aware of it.
And Naja as well, it's been continually underfunded. The legal aid sector has been continually underfunded in the Northern Territory. I mean, how does that stack up to, I guess, the ensuing public outrage, I guess, the fact that really critical services for a lot of these at-risk youths are constantly under threat, aren't they?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, legal services, therapeutic programs, they should be prioritised and funded appropriately, because they're the sort of things that are going to reduce the number of people coming in contact with the system, and they're the ones that are going to be actually making our community safer. It's actually up to the government now to start changing their mindset and looking at different ways of making communities safe.
Oh, yeah, you would hope so. And, I mean, the election's coming up in the Northern Territory. Do you think that this is going to affect the territory elections in any way? I mean, it's very rarely that these sort of issues, you know, create any sort of electoral... make any impact on the electorate, really. But do you think this case, it actually might? It might affect the Giles government?
Yeah, look, I think it is. I mean, there's been such a public outcry and people are just appalled that this is happening in their own home. So I reckon definitely it's going to be affecting it.
That was Chair of Naja, Priscilla Collins, an Aboriginal woman, Arante woman, who's a continual guest on this show and has been raising the problems around Dondale for a very long time, as she said that up in the territory, particularly at Naja, which is underfunded, by the way, is continually under threat of lack of federal funding. They actually had been through Dondale Detention Centre. They'd seen the horrendous, really horrendous conditions a lot of these kids were living in relation to what you saw on Four Corners, where the journalist actually went in and paced up and down the room and felt what it was like to actually be one of these kids. They'd seen that. They'd seen the footage. They'd given it and actually had helped spark the original inquiry. So now, after this ensuing outrage, much needed outrage, finally there's going to be a royal commission. But of course, now we're looking at the broader issues around the over representation of not just Aboriginal boys, but girls, women, men. And there's now a call for a broader royal commission, because obviously this is just the tip of the iceberg of the abuses by the Australian state against Aboriginal people that have continued since invasion. And so, you know, maybe this outrage can extend to all of the other horrendous things, abuses that Australia has done to blackfellas. And I'm thinking also, if you're talking about child abuse, you also have to look at the troubling, horrendous high rates of Aboriginal out-of-home care. So the new form of stolen generations that has meant a lot of Aboriginal kids being ripped away from families. But now, after the break, we might just go for a song, but after the break, I spoke to Sisters Inside CEO Debbie Kilroy about what she knows about the abuse inside jails and detention centres, and how she's calling on us to just start de-incarcerating, getting rid of jails and prisons for a lot of these people who are just in for minor offences that escalate and escalate. So I'll be back after the break. Frank Yema, Make More Sphere, and welcome back to Let's Talk, where our guest earlier this morning was Priscilla Collins, who's CEO of Naja, which is the North Australian Aboriginal Justice Agency, and they continually called for, you know, justice over Dondale, and they've been continually over the past couple of years actually trying to get something done about it. So it's great that there's outrage following on from ABC's Four Corners. And the ABC also reported yesterday focusing more on Queensland and talked about former youth workers in our detention centres who've come out and talked about the violence inside these institutions. So I'm just quoting from one story. Graham Patel was a youth worker in the Cleveland Youth Detention Centre up in Townsville for 8 years, and he actually said he witnessed excessive force and unnecessary violence against the boys. So he told the ABC that he'd been sacked for complaining about the centre on social media. He told the ABC, "They shut me up, they charged me under the Public Service Act and went through the process and sacked me. Now I do not think it's fair," he said. And the ABC have also quoted another ex-worker from the Cleveland Detention Centre up in Townsville, Jeff Ingram, who said he had filed numerous reports of the excessive force he had seen over several years. He talks to the ABC about one incident he alleged happened 2 years ago involving a senior staff member, and he said he put a boy in a headlock and hit him in the face with a steel can. And also the ABC spoke to Joshua Creamer, who's one of our Aboriginal barristers, and he's actually calling on the commission to be extended to Queensland and other states. And he basically said, after you've been told, after you've seen what's happened in Queensland, why should this restrict this Royal Commission to the Northern Territory only? Particularly a case yet last year that circulated mostly on social media over an 11-year-old Aboriginal boy in Brisbane, who actually, there was pictures of him with two black eyes and a bruised jaw in December. A review of that case by the police and the Internal Ethical Standards Unit deemed the boy's injuries were accidental, but it's now under investigation by the Crime and Corruption Commission. And the Queensland Attorney General has basically told the ABC, oh, you know, they've been trained appropriately. She basically claims that absolute focus is on de-escalating incidents. So there's a lot of concerns over in Queensland. And obviously some talk about trying to extend the Royal Commission. Now, I spoke to Sisters Inside CEO Debbie Kilroy yesterday, and she says it's not just, you know, not just talk about reforming the system. Let's talk about actually getting rid of prisons, because they are basically havens of torture and abuse. They're never going to change. So I spoke to her yesterday, and here's my chat with Debbie Kilroy. First of all, I just wanted to ask you, what did you think of when you saw those really troubling images last night?
Well, of course, I was horrified, you know, whenever we see such violence against children, you know, we're horrified and outraged. But I wasn't shocked in the sense that, you know, this is something new or this is, you know, the one-off thing. But, I mean, because we know that these types of violence that's perpetrated are perpetrated quite regularly in our prison system across this country, whether it's against young people or against adults. So I'm not shocked by the violence. I was shocked watching children being, you know, assaulted, kneed, sexually abused, their clothes cut off them, you know, but I'm not shocked because I know that happens. And it's happening today somewhere else in this country as we speak.
I was just going to say, I was really interested in what you said in your media release about how when you tell authorities and you try and get the actual details out there of these atrocities, you're actually told you're exaggerating constantly.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're told we're either exaggerating or we're lying. You know, you have no proof, you have no evidence because, you know, the system backs itself. So because you're up against that code of silence in the prison system and, you know, it's fearful to be exposed as the violence perpetrator of violence that it is, being the whole system, you know. Yep. And that's why we have to start thinking outside the bars and stop relying on prisons to be our default response to social issues in this country.
Yeah.
You know, people who are in prison are Aboriginal people, marginalised, disadvantaged, women who have been violated in every form, physically, emotionally, sexually, homeless people, people with mental illness, you know, it's a racist, sexist system that targets, you know, Aboriginal people first and foremost, women, particularly Aboriginal women and other women. And it's time that the system is exposed for what it is, and that it is violent.
Do you think a royal commission like the one that they've proposed today, Malcolm Turnbull has proposed, would actually delve into the underlying issues that you're talking about?
A short and dirty royal commission that's being proposed by the PM will deal with the issues that we saw last night. What I'm really concerned about is other children and girls. Where are the girls? What's happening to the girls? I know that that's happening to the girls, and I want it exposed. I want it stopped. So we're calling on a national royal commission. Some of my colleagues are saying, well, it's good that they get in and sort it out with those people there now, and that's fine, but other people will replace them in those positions of power and perpetrate violence again. It's the system that is violent, and the prison system has to be shut down. Young people cannot be put in these violent institutions any longer.
it's really sad because when you consider the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody 30 years ago, I mean, it probed all of this before, but a lot of it did, they didn't focus on Aboriginal women at all, even though there were cases, obviously, of brutality against Aboriginal women. Do you think there's that chance that women will be overlooked yet again, particularly young girls as well?
Well, if they have a Royal Commission just in regards to Don Dale and what was exposed last night, the girls will not even be mentioned, so they will be washed over again. And we know in the Ricky Dickey report, the 339 recommendations, and that report, I think women were, the word woman was maybe 4 to 6 times in that whole document.
Yeah, right.
Women and girls were totally forgotten about, and they are forgotten about again now, and we know that it's predominantly Aboriginal girls and women, you know, that are overrepresented, especially in the youth prison system,
yeah.
Well, and in the adult system, but a lot higher in the youth prison system. And those girls cannot be forgotten. Those Aboriginal girls and women cannot be forgotten.
And what are the reasons behind why they're the increasing representation of particularly young Aboriginal girls?
Well, we see, I think it's a number of things. I think there's a backlash from feminists, you know, the agitation of feminists.
Yep.
You know, you want to be treated, we'll treat you equally. It's that, you know, Aboriginal women and girls are at the bottom of a rung in yep. society, so they are targeted, you know, first and foremost. A lot of Aboriginal girls and women are on the street, so they will collide with police, you know, fairly regularly because of homelessness. You know, and that's why I talk about that prison can't be the default response to social issues. And that's what government has been relying on. They have been eviscerating funds from social services and using prisons as a dumping ground for marginalised and disadvantaged people in our country, particularly Aboriginal women and girls.
And even the media, I mean, this constant focus on tougher crime and law and order, I mean, that's a media role as well. And even the public, you know, they're very outraged about what happened in, up in the NT, but not so outraged about the drivers around their pushing for more law and order and this need to feel safe. White people need to feel safe in a way, and they see these Aboriginal people as automatically violent and scary. Is that part of the problem, those underlying perceptions of who we are as a people?
Well, it's a part of, it's the problem that is, that creates the fear in the white, you know, middle upper class, that they have to behave or they'll be treated like Aboriginal people or other disadvantaged non-Indigenous people because they don't want to be. So they turn a blind eye and maintain the silence and do nothing about it, because they don't want to give up their whiteness and their privilege in this country.
Yeah.
And it's time, you know, we have the Black Lives Matter movement from the US coming in, you know, that's now here in Australia, and people say, well, all lives matter. Well, if all lives matter, why aren't you on the street when there's marches around Black Lives Matters? Because if everyone life matters, then they should be rallying on the street with Aboriginal people and people of other cultures and people of colour to rally about Black Lives Matters, because, you know, we know that Aboriginal people, people of colour, are targeted.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, we have the systemic and structural racism and sexism. You know, we see it every day, and that's, and we see that when we walk into our prisons and see so many Aboriginal faces, women, girls, and in the system.
And it's easy, I think, for people to think it's just up in the NT, but you work in Queensland and you obviously see these types of abuses all the time, do you?
Well, I travel the country and women tell me about it all the time. What I saw last night is what I'd experienced when I was in a youth prison in the 70s. It doesn't change. And now we have, you know, Northern Territory Chief Minister coming out saying he's going to bulldozer it down and build a new youth prison. Well, that doesn't solve the problem. The culture just gets moved from an old facility to a new facility. We know that. Nothing changes if nothing changes. We've got to think outside the bars and stop locking people up. It is not the answer. It fails us all, and it most certainly fails children who are brutalised in there.
Oh, definitely, and I would agree, because just the situation down in Canberra, particularly the world's Australia's first human rights prison, they just had a death in custody down there. I mean, nothing changes.
I'm not laughing about the death in custody.
No, but I mean, the human rights prison, it's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Oxymoron, yeah, that's right. Well, that's what I said when I was first going, you know, talked about it. I was asked to go down there and speak to the person who was, you know, in charge of building this prison and wanted, you know, to have a human rights prison. And at that time, it was around 2000, just after 2004, when we lodged a human rights complaint against the Queensland government here for the systemic human rights breaches and discrimination that women and girls' experience in our prison system here. I was asked to go down there and discuss that with them so that they didn't repeat history.
Right.
But as I said to them then, you build a prison and it will be violent. That's the reality. That's why, you know, I'm an abolitionist. This is a size abolitionist. And, you know, that's what we work towards. I know I'm not going to see it in my lifetime, but we've got to start. The starting point has to be decarceration, keeping children and women and men out of the prison system. If they're in there, it has to be where they're treated with respect and dignity and given the services that are required to address the social issues, and whether it's mental health issues, drug issues, whatever it is inside there. And for people to get an education has to be a priority. You know, money has to be spent. And then when they're released, you know, there has to be support to keep them out.
Yep.
We have to decarcerate and abolish the prison industrial complex.
People see this as a radical idea. I assume people will listen to you and just think this is too radical, but it's not. I think it's starting to think of it as an actual solution, isn't it? Trying to make it more mainstream, pull it, say that, you know, this is actually what we do have to do. Do you get sort of feedback saying it's too radical? And what do we do about counteracting that?
They say, what are you going to do about the rapists and murderers? Well, prisons are perpetrators of rape and murder. We know how many people have died in custody. We know how many people get sexually abused and raped in prison, in custody. They are the facilitators and perpetrators of violence. Now, you know, I'm not saying, as abolitionists, we don't say, unlock the door, let everybody out. You know, if someone is going to bring harm to others in the community, well, yes, they need to be removed from the community, but not put in a prison which is so violent, because, you know, it just endorses their violent behaviour in the first instance anyway, and they become more violent, and they will eventually, the majority of people, released to the community. So it's better that we work decarceration, keep people out of prison in the first instance, and reduce the number of prisons in this country. But the prison industrial complex is big business.
Mm.
We're talking big business. We're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people employed in the system, you know, and jobs, the reliability of that. We are talking about pharmaceutical companies having to benefit, telephone companies benefiting, you know, all these big businesses that benefit from the prison industrial complex. It needs to be unpacked. So we're fighting huge corporations as well to stop building this system that is just sucking up the most marginalised and disadvantaged people in our communities.
Well, I guess if there was the will in the first place, because even it's expensive locking up people anyway, even when you consider that, you know, there's not that will there to actually help people and rehabilitate people, because, you know, everything's sort of going the other way, you know what I mean? Everything's getting worse. They're making it harder to begin this process that you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, we need to, you know, support people. You know, imagine if a baby's born today and is born into a world where there is no violence, there is no poverty, you know, that everyone has education and everyone has access to good health. That child will bloom. That child will grow. That child will be anything that child wants to be. But we don't. We actually only have resources for those who are the most advantaged in our communities, and the marginalised and disadvantaged have all their resources sucked dry. Like, we even had, you know, I think on the weekend there was an LNP Member of Parliament here saying that anyone on Centrelink should have their New Start payments cut after 6 months if they can't find a job. Well, where are the jobs?
Yeah.
Where are the jobs? You provide the jobs. They don't provide. They don't want to provide jobs, employment, but they want to punish those people who are getting about $240 a week, $240 a week. You cannot even pay rent for that.
No.
People don't understand the struggle. It's Struggle Street.
Oh, definitely. And it's just, people can't see it until it's put in front of their eyes in really horrendous footage like what we saw last night. But should it have to be? Like, I found it very hard to watch that footage, because I don't want to see kids hurt, and I don't want them to live with, you know, that footage being out in the arena forever. And I wonder about the trauma that they're going to deal with having that out in the public.
Well, that's right. They're already traumatised, and, you know, they're very brave children. You know, we know that, we heard from some of them last night saying they wanted the footage released to expose what's going on, which is very brave. But, I mean, you know, if you're treated like that, you will be violent. You will react violently. There is no other way to react, you know? Like, I know when violence was perpetrated against me when I was in the youth prison in the 70s, I was very violent because that was the only reaction that you had, because that was the only thing that you could control in yourself. These adults are brutalizing you, and you had to fight back. If you didn't fight back, you died.
Yeah, right. And it must be so horrendous to consider your own experiences and see it again in 2016. Oh.
Yeah, well, it's a daily occurrence, and it's time that Australians, we wake up and look inside the prisons that you want to dump people in and see the realities of that experience, and then think to yourself and wonder, wow, if I am allowing that to happen, endorsing that violence to happen to those children, why am I surprised about the violence that's perpetrated when they're released?
Yeah.
You know, like... It's you know, if someone's violent towards you, you try and protect yourself. You fight back. You be violent back.
Yeah, there's a complete lack of empathy in relation to that. They see one thing. Yeah.
Well, children are not adult men's punching bags or their torture toys like we saw last night, you know?
Yeah.
But violence prisons create this violence. It's an environment that actually... it festers and it blows up time and time again.
And I think the last thing I just guess had to point out as well is that Australians were generally shocked about Black Lives Matter over in the US, but they have to start thinking about it over here as well, don't they? Because there is a movement that's been going on for 200 years, you know. I mean, they just changed the way they do it, really, don't they, in relation to Black Lives?
Well, you know, when you're white and have privilege, you know, you don't want to look at those types of things because it actually will take away your privilege from your whiteness. And, you know, we have to stop living in a world like that. We are all human beings and we all deserve respect and dignity at its utmost, no matter who we are or where we are. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have no choice of where we're born, you know, whether we're born into poverty or born into a millionaire's family. We don't have that choice. But we can unpack our racism, our whiteness, our privilege, and see the other and those struggles, particularly, you know, the First Peoples of this country.
Oh, definitely. That was Sisters Inside CEO Debbie Kilroy speaking there, and she has a long, very long history of advocacy in this arena and is calling for the abolition of prisons. We shouldn't be locking up this many, particularly women, children, men. We've seen that they aren't safe places for our people particularly. They're just warehousing people. And behind closed doors, who knows what sort of abuse gets on behind closed doors. With 3 decades almost past the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody, and we're having another Royal Commission into abuses that should have changed, should have stopped 3 decades ago. It's just phenomenal that we're at this situation again. Actually, not phenomenal, because a lot of blackfellas have actually been calling for a good look into this for a very long time, and I'm hoping the outrage will continue to be sustained. This won't fall off the agenda. People won't be desensitized to it and start to realize that, you know, blackfellas who've been complaining about excessive police and prison violence for a very long time haven't been making it up. There's no reason for them to make it up. So I think that's a very important point to make. Also want to make the give a shout out to, there's going to be a rally in Brisbane this Saturday around the abuses at Dondale Detention Centre. I think it starts at around 1. For the week, we'll also update you on that protest, and we'll also put it up on our Facebook page. So we'll go for a song and I'll be back after the break.
If you missed today's show, catch the repeat from 7 p.m. weekdays or listen via the podcast at 989fm.com.au. Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
That was Kev Carmody, Eulogy for a Black Man. Very fitting, sadly, that these issues continue to be real issues within in our communities. But finally, after Four Corners aired on Monday, there's a lot of outrage. John Alfrink has been sacked as anti-corrections minister, sadly has kept his other portfolios and he was retiring anyway. Adam Giles should be held up as well as someone who's been complicit in this abuse. It happened under his watch. I find it completely ridiculous to consider his comments, to believe his comments that he had no idea about the state of the abuse, because he's actually been, I mean, the NT government have been trying to harshen a lot of these penalties, reforming the Bail Act to make it a lot more punitive, and also in relation to John Alfrink, I mean, even passing laws to make those forms of restriction, you know, widen those forms of restriction that we saw on Four Corners with that poor boy strapped into that chair, very similar to images we see of torture in Abu Ghraib and other areas around the world. It's actually unbelievable when you think about it. So the NT government have been scrambling for cover, but they really have a lot to do with this. The other person I want to talk about is Indigenous Affairs Minister Nigel Scullion, a member of the same party, the Country Liberal Party up in the NT, who claimed that, I think he said that original claims of abuse hadn't piqued his interest. And he wasn't actually watching Four Corners on Monday. He had to be told by Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. I mean, how silly can you be to even admit to that? Well, this happened on his watch. He's been Territory Senator for a very long time, a member of the CLP. Find it very hard to believe that he didn't know about this. Aboriginal media have been covering this. It was on the front page of the Courier Mail when the Howard Bath report first came out. So, you know, for a lot of these mob to be claiming they didn't know is a complete cop-out. It's time to stop believing their lies. I mean, blackfellas didn't believe their lies anyway, but a lot of white media did. And we have to start sticking up for the most vulnerable and not for the most powerful. And I think that's something that we all have to learn. And I'm hoping that Australian media will change as well. For now, that's all I have time for today. Join me again tomorrow for more Let's Talk. Appreciate your company here. And also, if you have anything you want to say, hit us up on the Facebook page, Let's Talk 98.9, or on Twitter, which you can find 98.9 for the best country. You'll be able to find us there.